I can't believe we just did that.
I know, me either. I'm beaming.
That was, she is, you know what's so weird? You're not exactly the same, but she's always reminded me of you.
Well, thank you. That is always a very high compliment. I was exactly the way I pictured it way back in the day, that the three of us would just sit around and be BFFs.
Hello. Welcome back to the Red Fern Book Review. I am your host, Amy Mayer, and I am joined by one of my very best friends in the world, who I just love so much. I don't know why I'm getting emotional. It started. Her name is Allison Schmelke, and she is going to be my guest co-host today. And she holds a BA in English Literature from the University of British Columbia. She is more well-read than me. She's funnier than me. She's more insightful than me and more dramatic, I think. So I think all of this is going to lend to a really good discussion. And we are here to talk about a book by one of our idols. And her name is Catherine Newman, and she's written her first novel for adults, and it's called We All Want Impossible Things. So with that, I would like to say hello, Allison.
Hello, Miss Amy. Thank you for having me.
It's so good to have you here. Okay, the first question I wanted to ask, you have never offered to be on the podcast before.
No.
Never. And you sent me an email and with this book, because I didn't know that she'd actually written a novel. And you said, oh my God, if you can get her on, I'm actually going to come on the podcast. So my first question is, what is it about this particular person that we're going to talk to, Catherine, that made you want to come on the podcast?
Well, I wanted to come on the podcast to talk about Catherine because it was with you, because Catherine was a huge part of our lives when our first sons were born.
Yeah.
And we really, that was when our friendship strengthened so much.
Yeah.
And she was such a big part of that. And with her early blog, and you and I both had a hard time.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
And she just brought us perspective and humor and brought us together. So, but having said that, I never thought that she would actually say yes.
I knew you actually weren't dying to come on the podcast.
I really don't. Yeah. This is not my jam.
This is not your jam. No. So I actually knew you really didn't want to come on the podcast. I just think you thought pie in the sky.
Yeah.
Wouldn't this be fun?
Yeah. I can talk to you for hours and hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to do it like this.
And then this is so funny. I sent an email to Catherine and I copied Allison and I just said, we're super fans, blah, blah, blah. Please come on the podcast. She got back in like a minute and a half and was like, oh my God. Cause like, I think the fact that we have this history with her and we're her age. And so, and then I kind of held Allison's feet to the fire. I kind of knew, but I think we're going to have fun. But let's just give a little, before we're going to interview Catherine together, but just a little background. And Catherine is hilarious. And I think what she did was she wrote this column called Ben and Birdie, and they're about her two children. And we just loved her blog, and you found it. Do you remember how you found it?
I don't remember, because at that time, like, we were hardly ever on the internet.
No.
I remember waiting for dinner to be over so I could run up to the attic at the time where our one computer was located so I could check to see if she'd like released a new blog that day. But I don't know how. I think I must have read about it in a magazine or something.
Well, it was off Baby Center, which I don't even know if that's still around, but you could get baby names off that, and then like tips on how to, like, I don't know, change a diaper. I don't even know what was going on. But the funny thing is, and in prep for this, she wrote this column called Ben and Birdie. And as we said, this was 2001, and there wasn't a lot of options for us. And there certainly wasn't like a thing called like a mommy blogger. That wasn't really a thing. And I wouldn't even put her in this category. I mean, she wrote this column, and I don't really remember the content, except what I do remember, she would write about things that we would all probably, if you've raised children, laugh about. It would be like, feeding them new foods for the first time.
Yeah.
And that just now seems ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Why would you even stress? You'd be stressed. And knowing you, you probably were like, grind it all up. You went and got organic food at Granville Island.
Oh, yes.
And then you like strained stuff. Uh-huh. And you probably only got what was in season.
Oh, yes.
And then you created these, like, and then you'd feel really in control because you had like a whole freezer full of like cubes.
It was all about control. Controlling the controllables.
And so she would, let's say, after you'd spent a week working on that, you would then read a column about that. Oh, and then all I remember is that she would write in depth about said topic and then somehow make us laugh.
Yes.
And then somehow know that even though you actually this time didn't buy organic food when you made your baby food, it's all about love in the end.
Exactly.
And so but the thing that I remember that you did do, you would send me these. I remember being, because in our first house, we had this basement suite, and sometimes I'd go down there to escape from the babies and Jeff, and I'd be down there and I would read this in the dark, and you would send me this note and you'd be like, how did she know? Do you remember that? Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, funny thing, when this book came out, I was like, let's do it. And I didn't even know what it was about. So this is actually, we're going to talk to her about it, but it's about best friends, and one of them is dying, and somehow it's a loving book and it's a funny book. But okay, one more thing. I'm just going to give you a little baby background on her, and I'm going to read from her back of her book, because this is just explains Catherine in a T. She said, in her own words, she's written a gazillion columns, articles, and canned bean recipes for magazines and newspapers. She's penned memoirs and even a middle grade novel. This is her first adult novel, not adult in the porn way, just, you know, for grownups. And she lives in Amherst, Massachusetts. So I think we're ready to talk to her.
I can't wait.
Okay. All right. Okay. Here we go.
Oh my God. I'm on this new computer and I don't know what I'm doing. Okay, hi. Also, I see that my filters didn't transfer over. I'm not in love with that.
I was just talking about how beet red my face is.
Yeah, okay. I'm usually all blurred out like I'm in a porn film, so this is kind of shocking. All right. Okay. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining.
Oh, thanks for having me. So I'm Catherine. Who's who?
I'm Amy.
Amy.
I'm the podcast is my podcast, and Allison is my guest co-host for today.
Okay. Hi, you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming.
We just did a little intro before you came on, and what we were talking about is before we talk about your book, we have to talk about Ben and Birdie, because that's why you're here. Like, I didn't even know what your book was about, and I didn't care. I just wanted to meet you, Ben and Birdie. And we loved it so much, and I just wanted to talk with you a little bit about that. Like, we were just discussing how at that time it was early 2000s, and there just weren't a lot of options. And the main thing was she found it. She can't remember how she found you. And we actually can't remember all the content. We just remember that we were really stressed about things that now we think are silly. And you were stressed about the same thing. And then you kind of somehow made it funny. And then you brought it back to love. And it was kind of the same every time. But she would send it to me. And I just used the example of maybe introducing a new food. And like we talked about it for hours and we're so worried. And then somehow she would say, how did Catherine know?
thanks. That's so great. I just wrote down stress, funny, love. Because that is probably a pretty good three-word summary of my career. That's a really nice way to frame that. I appreciate it.
Why do you think your column was so popular with so many people? And and Allison noted that we're thanked in your afterword because we're a fan. About your fan.
Right? I think the same thing you think. Like, I feel like before the internet, I mean, it's so weird now to even think about it, but I know. Sorry, my cat's complaining. I feel like, now we just are these like cows in the wilderness and we're mooing out. And because of the internet, other cows are mooing back to us. And they're like, oh my God, you know, twin Excel sheets. What a disaster. Our kids are leaving for college, whatever. And I feel like back then it was so new that you could like put something out and it would echo back to you, that like brand new internet feeling of like, oh my God, I'm not alone. You know, the thing our kids totally take for granted, like TikTok, you have a weird thing. 1,000 people on TikTok already made a video about how they can't stop Q-tipping their ears or like whatever your weird thing is. But for us back then, I feel like we didn't know other people thought the same thing as us. It was so new to find that like resonance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially if you didn't get to just talk with them every day. Like Amy and I felt like we were going through it together and both having actually a really hard time. So thankfully we had each other. But then when we found you, we were like, oh, there's actually people across the world that are going through this as well. Yeah. We're not literally not alone. And that would just make you feel so much better at the end of the day.
Just that, like the you are not alone vibe, I feel like was so profound. And it was really profound for me too, because I would put this stuff out there, like, I don't know, you know, anybody, and then get this like, you know, tsunami of like, yeah, me, I also have that, or like, oh my God, thank God. And then a bunch of people who were like, your kids should be taken away from you. But it really was, I do feel like it's hard for people who weren't new to the internet the way we all were. It's almost hard to evoke. Like if you had a baby now, there'd be 100,000 places to look and have your experience echoed back to you. So I just think for us, it was like, we were just like poking at it to see if anybody felt the way we felt.
Okay, so let's talk about the book.
Okay.
We'll move over. Okay. First of all, can you tell people, what is the book about? Tell people. We'll have you give a little.
It's so funny because I just like 2 days ago, I was like, oh, I got to come up with a better elevator pitch because I just described it to somebody as a sleazy hospice friendship romance. And she was like, really? That's not really a genre I'm familiar with. But that's
kind of it.
Sleazy hospice friendship romance. So the book is about a woman whose best friend is dying in hospice. And for sort of complicated logistical reasons, that is happening where the narrator lives in her town, and she takes on this role of kind of primary point person for this passage. And it's a book about friendship and death and sex. And she has two sort of half-grown daughters. She has a faltering marriage. And she is trying to navigate all of these things while being kind of blown apart by grief. So, you know, a person who's been just blown apart and then is wide open to life and love and the world.
That's That's good. Okay. The first thing that came to mind when I read this book, you are known for your nonfiction. You have written a middle grade novel that's fiction. And this is based on, you had a personal experience of your best friend passed away. And so my question is, I know you wrote something in the New York Times about that. Why did you decide, when you're known, and obviously it's easy for you to access the nonfiction, what made you decide to create a novel of fiction around the storyline?
So no spoilers. I mean, it's kind of obvious from the beginning that this is what's happening in the book, but the main character is like kind of inappropriately sleeping with everybody. And when my friend was dying, I experienced this thing that the main character experiences, not coincidentally, called, the main character in this book calls it her falling in love disorder, which I actually always have called it too. And that is part of the being blown apart by grief, is that she's so open that everybody she encounters, everybody, she just falls in love with them. And that is her kids, her ex-husband, all of her friends, everyone in the hospice. She is just, her friend who's dying, she's just like in love with the world. And I had that experience. And I remember saying to a friend of mine at the time, I'm going to have to write this as a novel, because the only way I'm going to be able to communicate this experience is if she's sleeping with everybody. Because it's like the best way to translate this.
Right. Okay. Like almost like a lack of boundaries, or just like everything's open to her?
All those things. So on the one hand, a lack of boundaries. I just read a 1-star Goodreads review that was like, why does this person have no boundaries? I was like, I'm really sorry. A lack of boundaries is, I think, the traditional sort of negative framework of it. I think so. And she's clearly like behaving in some unhealthy ways. I think the positive version of it is, in the face of this incalculable loss, she is just grabbing at love, and at connection, and finding one thing about the book, that I like, that seems to be driving some other people crazy, is that, everywhere she turns, people meet her where she's at. People just, there's not like somebody in the book who's a jerk. There's one character who's not the greatest, but like people just keep meeting her where she's at. She's grieving. She's needy. She's all over the place. She's a mess. And people keep showing up for her with love. And that was my experience. And that part, I feel like, is an opportunity, even though it's, you know, also some boundarylessness.
Well, because we often don't do that in our own lives. But when you're so vulnerable and raw like that,
yeah,
you're putting yourself out there, and what an incredible gift to be met where you are with only love when you're so vulnerable and raw.
Exactly. And in fact, I don't think this is in the book. Look, I already don't remember what's in the book. But when my friend died in real life, I came home. She died in New York. I came home to Western Massachusetts. And my friends just came to the house. Like, I can't even explain it really, but like everybody we loved, without being especially invited or prompted, people just started coming to the house, like with food, with musical instruments. And by the end of the night, there were like 25 people in our house playing music and eating. And it was the most like beautiful. I mean, I think that happens a lot when people die, that people just show up for you. But it was so moving to me.
just that impulse to just like come be with us. And I loved it. So there's a lot of that flavor in the book, I think.
One of my questions for you, because you have been able to do this in everything that I've ever read with you, is weave humor in so effortlessly to what you're writing. And yes, it's funny that you say I don't remember what was in my book, because I read this, I tried to read it as close to when we were going to meet you as possible. So yesterday I was finishing it. And yesterday was a really hard day for me. I have stuff going on in my own family and I was really tired. And so I was reading the end and I was crying at the funeral, which I don't think is a spoiler because we, and I was crying and then I got to page, when the dad whispers, when the montage is coming up, I never was a fan of that particular hairstyle. And I burst out laughing and I was crying and laughing at the same time. But is that, my question is that as effortless as it seems to be for you? Or is that a way of, like, you have to try to put that humor in because that's sort of your thing?
It's a good question. I mean, the humor is a funny thing. Like, the only reason there are any Jews still alive on the planet is because we were funny. And so I just feel like it's such a inborn survival strategy that I seem to have inherited from a long line of like funny Jews. On the one hand, on the other hand, my mother is British and not Jewish and is very self-contained and proper. So I definitely have
competing. That must have been an interesting teenagehood.
Yeah, it continues to be an interesting adulthood. But I will say that impulse of, I definitely, like, when I think about writing the Ben and Broody column, I remember like holding my hands cupped for someone to barf into them and thinking, at least this is going to be a funny story. Right. And I have had that like narrative impulse, which I think in despair is very, there's a lot of salvation in it, of projecting into the future when I'm going to be looking back and it's going to be something about it's going to be funny. So on the one hand that, and on the other hand, the material I am given is, it's handed to me on a platter. I wrote this book while Birdie was living at home because of the pandemic. And I basically transcribed everything she said in real time. Like, there's not a line that this Belle character has that is not a thing that came out of Birdie's mouth.
I was gonna ask that too.
She is just like a font of brilliant, like, craziness. So that was great. And my father really does say shit he's actually a little peeved about the book. He feels that I misrepresented him. And I was like, Dad, Ash loves her father. So, like, if you miss that she feels well loved by those parents, like, that's some not great reading, in my opinion. However, my dad's offended. Just let it be noted.
Well, I think he sounds great. Hilarious.
Let's do a reading.
So in this chapter, the main character has brought her 16-year-old daughter to the hospice. I think she's 16. I, again, don't remember. Inside the hospice, Belle glows like a shiny ambassador from the land of youth. It feels almost indecent to bring her. Belle, Edie cries when she sees her. Oh, yay. Edie's the friend who's dying. Hi, Belle says and leans over to kiss Edie's cheek, a little shy. Hospice is just so existentially weird. It's like you walk in under a giant banner that says, everyone here is dying. But then most of the time you're just making small talk and quesadillas, trying to find something to watch on Netflix or wondering if there's any pie left. I mean, isn't that just life though? Jonah had said to me when I described this. we're doing all the things, enjoying ourselves where we can, even though we're all just going to die at the end of it. Jonah's a friend of hers who's Edie's brother. Geez, Jonah, I'd said. Too much fucking perspective, he asked, because all the men in my life like to quote from Spinal Tap whenever the occasion arises. But yes, too much fucking perspective. Violet comes in while we're bundling Edie up, smiles at us. Are they breaking you out? Violet's a nurse. Are they breaking you out? She says to Edie, and Edie says, yep, finally. Violet helps us sort out the tubes and wires, the down jacket and blankets and slippers, helps us help Edie from the edge of the bed into the wheelchair, which is inexplicably more epic than it sounds, like trying to get your suitcase into the overhead bin, only it's made of heavy, floppy bones and cries out sometimes. Edie grimaces every few seconds, and it's terrible. Eads, I say, grimacing myself, and she says, no, I'm good. To life, l'chaim. Bella's singing along. There's someone in the hospice who's always listening to Fiddler on the Roof. Belle stops, peering into the hallway. Is that a crib? She whispers, and I nod. She raises her eyebrows questioningly, and I shake my head, shrug. Oof, she says. There's a baby in the hospice. Are you guys just going into the courtyard? Violet asks. Would you be willing to take Farah out to pee? Violet inherited Farah Fawcett from a longtime resident of the hospice who died last year. Farah's a dog. There's an elderly chihuahua floating around here too, adopted by Violet in a similar fashion, but he's usually cowering under the desk at the nurse's station. Of course, I say. Do you want me to take Tiny too? Nah, she says. He's scared of the courtyard. Here, let's finish getting everybody ready. The sun rises and sets, calendar pages fly off the wall. The roses bud, open, wilt, drop all their petals, the ice caps finish melting, the seas rise, and finally Edie is ready to go. I kind of have to pee, she says, and I laugh, say, okay. I remember a long ago snow day. Jules, this is her older daughter, Jules. Jules insisted on dressing herself, so I left her to it while I changed Belle's diaper, noodled her fat little arms and kinky little legs into woolly long underwear, stuffed her whole round woolly little self into a down sack, and zipped it up carefully over her tummy and under her many chins. When I looked up again, Jules had stuffed both feet down one leg of her snowsuit and also zipped her hair into it. She cried and cried while I gentled her hair out of the zipper and tugged out her legs. Don't help me, she was sobbing and furious, and then finally rocked in my arms, face patted dry with a tissue, consoled. Had the snow already melted by now? I peered out the window. It had not. Jules stood up from my lap to pull on her boots, and then Belle from the carpet where she was still on her back, waving her little arms and legs around like an upended tortoise, announced proudly, Mama, I'm pooping. I'll stop there.
That's great. Isn't that, you know, it's that reading that last bit, because that's what you had asked me what I wanted you to read. And I mean, I think what you're trying to do with this novel, many things, like you talked about, this is about grief, but it's about bringing everything together. And I thought a lot about when I was reading this is the passage of time. And that snowsuit passage, it made me emotional. And it also made me think of I was just even thinking about Ivan. So her son, Ivan's 22, and he's very accomplished. And sometimes he's a bit serious. And I can think about him, you know, naked in the paddling pool with my son. And every time I see him, I have these feelings, but I can't reveal them. And I sort of feel like that's what this reminded me of. I was like, I know you, but I don't know necessarily all the new things about him. And actually, I mean, I don't know. It's just captured that.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yes. It's the thing I've always written about. I think I've written about it. I think it's actually in this novel too, but I used to write about it in the column of feeling that feeling of all the nested selves, your kids are these Matryoshka dolls. And you just, inside them are all the selves they've already been, you know, that weird feeling. And it's so layered, or an onion, or I feel that layeredness. And I feel too, I volunteer in a hospice as another kind of complicated part of this book, but I make dinner in a hospice every Monday night, and I've done that for years. But there's also something about the sort of cycle of caretaking that is astonishing to me in this life that, you know, here we're like people who've cared for little children, and then there comes a time where you care for adults, you know, where you either shepherd a friend out of life or your parents or strangers if you have that kind of job. And that is very emotional for me too, that feeling of like, oh, that full circle weird feeling of sort of bringing someone into the world via caretaking and then sending someone out of the world. It's incredibly moving to me.
Is this, having written this book and now talking about it a lot, and I saw your review in the New York Times yesterday, congratulations. I actually just opened up the New York Times, which I get, and I was like, oh my God, I actually get to meet my hero tomorrow, and she's in the New York Times today. But I was wondering if the process of writing the book and now talking about it a lot and stuff, is that, how is that for you, thinking about your friend?
It's really strange. I got to say, she's in our lives a lot. Like, we see her family and her kids. Like, she's very present for us. It's not like long stretches pass and I don't think of her. So, but then, you know, when I wrote the book, I was very in it. I had taken a lot of notes when she was dying. She watched me do and had mixed feelings about. But so I'd taken a lot of notes. And so when I was writing the book, being immersed in that was really a mixed bag. On the one hand, I had this great reason to kind of wallow around in my own grief. Like, I'm writing a book. I have to be this grief-stricken. I'm trying to do my work, you know. And on the other hand, just devastating. And then this weird amount of time passed, you know, you sell a book and then basically like 2 years pass and then the book comes out. I mean, things happen along the way, but, and then I realized this box of books came from the publisher, you know, the finished, what they call the finished copies. And right before I opened the box, I realized that like, my friend wasn't going to genie out of the box. And not that I had ever thought she would, but there was something so, like, I was so excited cutting open the tape and then so sad, for want of a better word, like this feeling that I had not magicked her back into life somehow, which I never thought I was going to. But it was, it's been a little disappointing.
A feeling of finality, or it almost.
Yeah, maybe like this other thing was happening. Like, yeah. Death is so dull. It's like people die and they're just dead forever. And so I think that there was something like happening that gave me this kind of excited feeling. And then it really was not happening in that way, you know? So mm-hmm. What would
Allie think of this book?
Do you think? I really don't know. Her husband got first crack at reading it before anything happened with it, and, you know, signed off on it, which was all I really needed to happen. I mean, I can't really imagine. I just couldn't have written the book if she were alive, so I can't quite piece it together. I think she would think it was a book about me, and it is. I mean, that's the thing. Like, when somebody, you know, the other thing people like to complain about on Goodreads is that Ash is a narcissist. You only know that because she told you. Like, I just feel like, yeah, that's a theme of the book. Like, that's not figuring something out.
Ash is the healthy friend, and she makes it about her a lot of the time.
Everything
the eulogy,
is about
at the like
all of it is
the
about
hospice, yeah. Like
right
kind of stealing the thunder.
Yep. Yep. Stealing everybody's best lines, making notes while our friend is dying. So I feel like that part, that was not news to my best friend of 40 years. So I don't know. I don't know what she would think. She wouldn't be here. I mean, I wouldn't have written the book, you know.
I have a kind of a frivolous question to ask, I guess. Oh, but I know that you've written for so many different magazines and publications over the years. And I was wondering, I said to Amy and she was like, oh, ask. Have you ever actually met Oprah?
No. Oh. No. I have never met Oprah. And
did you meet Gail?
What?
Did you meet Gail?
I know I've never met Gail. I've written a fair amount for that magazine, but I've never met her. And like every now and then something I've written will be in the ed note, you know, that she allegedly has written, but I'm not sure she really writes her own ed notes. But then I'm like, oh, did Oprah's eyes pass over a thing I wrote per chance? But and I had that again. Again, we know Ash is a narcissist, so let's not be shocked by this. But when the Times named this book like one of November's must reads, and it was on a page with Michelle Obama's book, all I thought was like, I wonder if Michelle Obama's eyeballs will pass over my name. Like I felt so graced by the potential. Anyway, no way of knowing.
Like, really. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Do you have any other questions?
It's interesting when you were talking about the like the very visceral parts of being in the hospice, because your writing, I was saying to Amy, when you're describing particular the hospice, but I'm not as familiar with that setting, but your home setting with the food and the cats and the kind of like, I could smell sort of like the unwashed bodies and the dishes and the sink, like nothing else matters, right? Except Amy and what's happening with that. And you did such a good job of weaving that through. And food is a big part of your writing as well too, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is. I wanted there to be a lot of food, partly because in real life, that friendship was very food-centric. And hospice can be an incredibly food-focused place because it's kind of, you're very constrained in what pleasures you have access to. But if you can still eat or can still taste or still enjoy, food is very central. And I find that to be always true in hospice. Like the people who are still eating, they're like, what'd you make? You know, it's very, so I did want food. And also that twinned thing of like, you know, death and life, like, you know, at some point, I think it's in this book. At some point, one of the characters says, it's so stupid, but I'm kind of hungry. And it's like, right. It's not stupid. It's like your body doing its animal thing and it keeps doing it. Even if your heart is breaking, you keep having to eat and pee and sleep. And it's the weirdest experience. But everyone who has experienced a huge loss knows that experience of your body keeps making its demands. It's so strange. Even the dying body keeps making its demands. You know, in the book, Edie's so thirsty all the time and she has to keep drinking. And it's like, you know, she's dying, but in the meantime, the body has all these things it needs and wants. So I think the food piece is just a mix of stuff, I guess.
And I think talking about the thirst, I just also wanted to comment on the cover art is so beautiful.
It's Isn't
a can,
it?
Like a soda can with a straw coming out and then a flower coming out. And because she's so thirsty all the time, I didn't know what it was until about halfway through. And I was like, oh, that's what it,
you know. I know. I love it so much because it's funny. I've never had this experience, but they sent me this cover as it is. It was the first cover I saw. And I was like blown away by it. It's so perfect. Because, you know, hospice and friendship, I was like, oh, no, what are they going to do? Is it going to be, like, clasped hands? Or, you know, like, I just had this, like, horror. I had this terror of like corniness or sort of hallmarkiness, even though I was braced for it. I was like, that would be fun. It should be clasped hands. I'm glad it's going to be clasped hands, you know, whatever. But then it was this, and it's like so unbelievably perfect.
In its simplicity. Like it's just,
Yeah. The straw, the flower, two petals. I love, love it. Yeah. I wrote the artist who painted it. I wrote this like long love letter. Oh. So seen by the cover. And she wrote me back a really long thing about her process. Like she read the book, you know. Yeah.
She read the whole book? Wow.
She read the book, right? Anyway, amazing. Yes, I'm with you. The cover is like astonishing.
Yeah, love it.
Well, anything? I'm good. You good? I just want to let you know this has meant so much to have you. And honestly, like Allison has never, I didn't think she, this is the funny part. We were just discussing this. She's never offered to come on. I knew she didn't want to come on. And then so she sent me this note. And she's like, wouldn't it be great? Catherine comes on. I'll come on too. And I knew she knew you were never coming on. And I sent you an email and you got back in a minute and a half.
I was like, oh God. Okay.
And then I never admitted until today. I knew she still didn't want to come on, but I was like, Gricky, this will be so fun. And so here she is. Well,
I'm really glad you came on. I'm so glad we did this.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I can tick something off not my bucket list, but my list of things I wanted to do. Meet Catherine Newman.
Great. Well, I'm so glad I got to talk to you guys. Thank you. Really sweet to be asked questions that went that far back. I was very sweet for me.
Good luck with your book, and we're going to be reading you. So
okay. Thanks, you guys.
Bye.
I don't me either.
I'm beaming. That was she is, you know what's so weird? You're not exactly the same, but she's always reminded me of you.
Wow, thank you. That is always a very high compliment. I was exactly the way I pictured it way back in the day, that the three of us would just sit around and be BFFs.
Well, that's what it felt like today. And okay, so you listen to the podcast, I want you to send us out. And we'll have the Allison really likes my music.
Oh, I love the theme music. It reminds me of my favorite show, Friday Night Lights.
So your voice is going to be carrying over the music. So, okay.
Well, thanks for having me, Miss Amy. Okay. And to everyone listening, thanks for listening.
Thank Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine. Okay. It was an honor.
Okay, bye.